modern brain.
Brain and brain, what is brain?
Yes, and we're back. So, still with me is Michael Clark and Senior Alvarado.
Hello.
Hi, y'all.
How are you doing, Sina?
Doing well.
Doing well. Good.
Even though I had to kind of, you know, separate you and Mark there during the last hour.
No, we're allowed to bicker. We love each other no matter what. Variety is the spice of life.
It'd be very boring if we all agreed on the same thing.
Exactly. So I do enjoy hearing Mark's opinions. And that's the thing. I know that I'm in the minority with regards to data. And I think I sometimes enjoy that. Just to
you
say
like
this.
Contrary.
Sorry, Cena?
You like being contrary.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to wind people up every so often. So, obviously, I think this is a good point to remind everybody why we're here and why we're discussing things. And that is because we're trying to raise as much money as we can for two charities. For the Watford General Hospital Special Care Baby Unit, who do fantastic work at saving and preserving the quality of life and life of the youngsters that means so much to all of us expectant parents. So, and they do a fantastic job. I know that firsthand, so any support for them is most appreciated. And also for Amnesty International, a wonderful group who work towards helping to safeguard the basic human rights of many people all over the world. So, two very worthy charities. So, if you could find in your heart to donate just a little bit of money to help out them two charities, it's most appreciated. And remember, whoever has the highest donation by 8 p.m. tonight will be walking away with a brand new iPad. So get donating, guys. It really does make a difference. So, Cena, yeah. I believe now it's time for one of your sections. Shall I play the bumper for it?
Absolutely.
Time to get your trek on. It's Desert Island Trek, the section of the show where we discuss what episodes we would take with us to a desert island on the 10 Forward podcast.
There you go.
Okay, well, on 10 Forward, what we like to do is we strand our guests on a desert island and we ask them to pick the five episodes, their favorite five episodes, to go with them. Only five episodes. And it has to be television episodes. It cannot be movies, JD in the Wilderness. And we do have some gimmies. They're on the website. And some are fairly popular choices on the website that are gimmies, some are not, but there's a reason behind every single one of them. But now, Wayne, it's your turn. What five episodes would you take with you on your desert island?
Okay.
What's your first one?
Okay, well, is it okay to go in any particular order?
No particular order.
Okay. Well, I'll get the obvious one out the way, as it's going to be no surprise to our regular listeners. And the first episode that I'd have to take with me is The Inner Light. Personally, for me, this episode, it just takes me to such... I don't know. It just takes me to such a warm place in my heart because it was... Captain Picard has always been the no children, duty comes first officer. And he then gets stranded on a planet, not knowing whether his experiences on the Enterprise were real or fabricated. And he spends years... He's suddenly thrown into this life where he's got a wife, he's got friends, he's stuck in this remote village on a barren planet. And he fights... The urge, like, that, okay, this must just be life. It's, no, he holds on to everything that is Starfleet for so long until he eventually falls in love with the woman that is meant to be his wife. And he lives out an entire lifetime in the matter of minutes and has children, has grandchildren. And you just see his character just flourish and bloom in a way that Picard had never explored before, because he had never allowed himself to do that. And for me, it just opened up so many doors to how the the character of Picard, like, really, it really helps flesh him out even more so, because underneath all of this bravado, after he'd spent so many years on this planet, he found true happiness in being a dad and a husband and a granddad. And then one thing that I do regret with the Inner Light is that they never had any sort of follow-up, real follow-up, to show the consequences of living this entire lifetime and then having lost his entire family. For me...
only kind of callback that they had was in... Was it Lessons?
Yes, it was.
But it was really more about him opening up to Darren about him being able to play that flute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. I did love seeing him experiencing that with Lieutenant Darren, but once again, he ended up cutting himself away from the potential of having a relationship, because he didn't want to risk losing her or treating her differently than any other crew member that he potentially would. And I don't necessarily think that that is the lesson that he would have taken away from the Inner Light.
But you know what? That they continue along that theme. If you listen to the last Ten Forward book club, that's one of the major themes in Greater Than the Sum, mm-hmm. in the relaunch novels. They deal with the repercussions of the Inner Light. Mm-hmm. And while it might have been kind of, you know, dragging for me, I mean, at least they do show that he hasn't really ever dealt with it. And in that book, he has an emotional breakdown because of everything he experienced in the Inner Light. So at least that was a good callback to this episode, but you're right, they never really deal with it in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am glad they address it somewhere. I know that they've been doing an online comic as well recently with the original writer of the episode. It's just, I just feel it was a shame that they didn't show any sort of real emotional progression, like, on the screen or reflection. But unfortunately, that's just a sign of the series, because that is what TNG was. It was episodic, and unfortunately, there weren't many things that did follow along that lines.
Could you say that maybe when Picard was in the Nexus might have been somewhat of a follow-up
this? Yes, this is something...
I'm sorry, not only the fact that his immediate family... It has passed because of the fire, but also because of his wanting to be with a family, have his family in the Nexus, a callback to what he experienced in the Inner Light.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because that is something that I was discussing that recently with someone. I'm not sure if it was on a pod or not. I can't remember. It's who had said that it was unrealistic that he just got lumbered in like this world in Nexus. It's like, no, after everything that he had been through in the Inner Light, it just shows that is really underneath it all, his heart desired. He wanted that emotional attachment. He wanted that life, that family life, despite like being a captain that flies here, there, and everywhere. That is the thing that he truly sought after. And I am glad that they showed it in there. But you know what I mean when I just say I would have preferred them to have actually addressed it more smack in your face as well. But still, it's an absolutely amazing episode, and it's one that I can never get enough of. I watch it to death.
Don't forget the music as well. I think the music made the episode too. Some wonderful music in that episode.
Yeah, the Ruskan flute was absolutely fantastic. And Patrick Stewart done an amazing job of actually making it look like he was playing it.
Yeah.
Considering it was just a solid piece of metal or wood, whatever it was, metal. He spent a lot of time watching like the musicians who was playing that and it nailed it to a T. And that piece of music I've listened to countless times, absolutely countless times, and it always gives me goosebumps and strikes a real nerve with me. I know there are going to be tons of people out there that feel the same way.
What about you, Michael? What do you like about this episode?
I think Wayne summed it up, but just in general, the whole, you get to see the part of Picard that deep down he wants, as Wayne mentioned, and I think that's nice. And the fact it all happens within 25 minutes is just amazing. It's just a brilliant episode, and I think, again, it's just brilliant acting from Patrick Stewart. Just, again, a tour de force from him, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's your next episode, Wayne?
The next episode, for me, it's one that not a lot of people would choose, is Someone to Watch Over Me from Voyager.
Which so what is, what do you like about that episode?
I just love... I'm not sure if it's because this episode was out when it was like where I'm at that... I was at that teenage point in my life where you always have your secret, like your desires, your want in relationships where there may not be relationships, and just watching the Doctor go through the motions of falling hopelessly in love with Seven, and Seven to be totally oblivious of it, and to just not disregard the Doctor, because she's just unaware. She's just totally unaware. She never even considers him a potential partner, because this is the episode where she's trying to indulge in dating. And the Doctor really teaches her, finds out like whether she has any interest, a hobby, something that she can talk about. And this is obviously where you get them singing You Are My Sunshine. To each other.
I love that. I happen to really like that song.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I do as well. Absolutely love it. And it's just, Robert Picardo plays it so fantastically, because obviously Jeri Ryan is a beautiful woman, but just to see the Doctor's emotional reaction, yes, I know he's a computer program, that's fine. just his longing for her, and you could see the almost like the realization when he is looking at her, and he finally clicks. You know what? I think I really like this woman, and it's just a fantastic journey for me, and to. Even though it doesn't turn out the way that the Doctor may have wanted it to, it doesn't work out well for him. That's probably something that I can relate to, as that happened many times in my life. I'm a geek. This happens to all of us.
No, definitely.
So, it's just one of them episodes that I, once again, just find it really fun to watch as well.
I guess the universal theme of unrequited love is just, like I said, universal. Everybody can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You have to feel something for Seven as well, especially when the Doctor and Paris have the bet. You just have to feel for her, because she thinks she's doing so well, isn't it? The setting for her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Definitely. So would you like my third?
Yes, please.
Okay, then. My third that I've chosen is the Deep Space Nine episode, Sacrifice of Angels.
Brilliant.
And this episode is just absolutely fantastic. because just for that that moment, just where you see Golda Katz, like him and his daughter just sorted things out, and then see her just being snatched away from him. It's just absolutely, it's one of them episodes that really sticks with you as well.
Right. The first time I saw that, I was, you get involved and you engage with Uziel, and to see her, like you said, just, it was horrible. It was pretty bad. That was shocking.
Yeah.
Although in retrospect, it shouldn't have been shocking for me, but it was.
And that's the thing. It's funny, from that episode, that's the first thing that I jump to. It's just like the character situations. Because this episode has some amazing fleet scenes. Absolutely. If space fights are your thing. As Paul Drinkwater would say. Because just the whole tension of the getting the minefield down and then just missing the opportunity, reinforcements are coming through. It's everything about it. It's just action-packed galore.
There's something for everyone in this episode, isn't there, really?
There really is. No matter what level... It's Deep Space Nine down to a T. No matter what level of sort of fan you are, like what grips you, it whacks it all on a plate for everyone to enjoy at the same time. Because I loved the build-up to this episode as well, like the huge arc where you've got everybody like sneakily getting through like the systems and like making sure that they can try and take down the minefield. Even from when you first start out, and I'm pretty sure it's the beginning of this episode where you see Morn have to take a secret message to Starfleet because he was going on holiday.
That's right.
Because they find out that, well, Damar comes in and is all boasting to Quark that the minefield's coming down, and it's coming down in this many days. So they take advantage of Morn's trip home and write a message on his ribbon. He's taking a present home for someone, and it's just action packed all the way through, and so many amazing character scenes as well.
I think as well with when when Sisko makes the deal with the prophets or wormhole aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And to get rid of the Dominion fleet, and they say a penance must be, you know, exacted, and obviously we see that at the end of season 7 what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it links back to there, so that's good.
Yeah, exactly. And Deep Space Nine did have most of the time it tied up all of its loose ends nicely. It doesn't let you down there. And then even just like the closing scenes where you see just how Ducat has been like damaged by the loss of Ziar. It's a true reaction. It's something that I could firmly believe. And I think he plays it exceptionally well.
Going back a little bit earlier in the episode, there's a scene between Wayun and Ducat where you get a glimpse into more of Ducat's character, where they are talking about they think they have the victory, and Wayun is trying to think about, you know, the logistics of administering or the administration of the conquered territories, Federation territories, quote unquote. But Ducat is just essentially saying, well, well, you know, we shouldn't just kill everybody. We should let them, let our enemies live so that they can see how, you know, how we bested them, how good they are, and how the one thing he regretted about the Bajoran occupation wasn't that the Cardassians occupied it, but was that they didn't see him as the role that he so tried so hard to embody was that of a protector. And I don't know if that's just, you know, self-delusion or if he, you know, was just saying that, but it just really does give you more insight into his character.
I agree with you in the sense of I just think, like every good villain, he firmly believed what he was doing was right, and he was just absolutely bat-crap crazy. I just think he 100% believed his own delusions. And there was just that no one else would have ever been able to tell him different. Kira might as well have like been smacking her head against a brick wall.
Yes.
So, yeah. No, I. So that is one episode that I'd be perfectly happy with. We said just because it hits so many notes. So that one will always be a favourite of mine. And my fourth, I believe, would be this. This is one that not I don't think that many people would pick or have picked yet. Is The Cage. Going back to where it all began.
That's right, the first pilot.
Yeah, the very first pilot, not even with Kirk, with good old Christopher Pike. Just because I really feel this episode was an episode way before its time. And even though it would have been an entirely different series had this pilot had progressed onto a full-time series, I just feel it's a very well-put-together piece. Considering when it was done, because it addresses so much the Talosians in capturing Pike, wanting to create a race of human slaves, to just seeing the such a strong female character in Number One, and she was the one that really, for me personally, held the ideals that are common throughout the Federation. She was the one that was not willing to sacrifice any form of freedom for any generation of humans. She was willing to sacrifice it all.
Right, doesn't she basically threaten to kill herself and everybody before she lets the Talosians do what they want?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, she... basically, they... they've got her, the other female officer, and the lady who was already trapped on the planet. And it was basically, okay, then pick one, and the other two are going to get killed, I think it was. Wasn't it, Michael?
Yeah,
and then,
I think so.
And then Pike says, no, look, I'll stay. Send the other two home. And then at that point, Number One sets a phaser to overload. And it's like, no one's staying here at all, because if one person stays, if one human stays, you'll keep trying this. And there is no way that slavery is, you're ever going to enslave anyone. And it just such strong moral backbone from a female character in that day and age. I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it's, to be honest, it's a two-parter, pretty much. And it just, I just find it really, really interesting, very entertaining. It's funny to see a very different Spock, because obviously he's not quite the emotional character that he turns out to be. He's quite a vocal, quite shouty character. Go for it.
Oh, I was just going to ask you. So let's take this off on a tangent here, because we all know the story. Gene Roddenberry writes this. It gets shot, presents it to the studio, and they reject it, saying, not enough action, too cerebral, try again. So they probably also had some comments in there about it not being believable that a woman, you know, was the first officer. But so how do you think, had they liked it and said, go and do it, what are your thoughts, both of you, on the direction Star Trek might have taken in the 60s?
I think we would have, I think if Pike had remained as captain, I think we would have seen a different captain, a more darker, moodier captain, I think, than what we saw with Kirk, perhaps not much of a womanizer. I think the story sort of stayed pretty much the same. But I think that the captain would have been totally different, because he and Kirk, it's two contrasts, isn't it? And I don't think I would have liked the Spock from the cage if they'd kept him the same. Don't know what you think, Wayne.
No, I agree. If Spock had remained the same Spock that he was in the cage, he probably wouldn't have become the loved character that he is now. But then also, what I did enjoy is the relationship between Pike and his doctor, because he was a very different doctor to McCoy, and they really gelled well, in my opinion. He was more like the barkeep that Pike could entrust everything with, and I feel that if the cage had gone on, we probably wouldn't have got quite as many of the silly, tongue-in-cheek, fun episodes. I doubt you would have got a Shorty.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So it would have become an entirely different beast. But for a standalone story, I think it's fantastic.
What do you think of it, Michael?
I really like the cage. I think for the first episode, it was really, really good, and it was ahead of its time. I actually loved the bridge set as well. I just thought it was more Starfleet than the multicoloured bridge we had from Where No Man Has Gone Before. That's one of the things that always stood out for me when I watched the cage, is how more military the bridge looked compared to the time of Kirk. But the story itself is just brilliant, and I love the character of Number One, and it's a shame that, you know, the network didn't have the guts to continue with a woman in such a major part, really. Brilliant story.
Yeah. Definitely. Would you like my fifth?
I would.
Okay. And my fifth is also one that not necessarily everybody would also pick. But for me, it gives me that warm feeling, because this was the first episode that I ever owned on VHS. And as such, I watched it to death. And that was True Q. So it's the episode where a lovely lady named Amanda Rogers joins the crew. And she's finds out that she is in fact a Q, whose parents had been assassinated by the Continuum.
And she, do you remember how they die?
A hurricane or tornado.
A tornado in Kansas.
Yeah, no, it was very Wizard of Oz.
Yes, the tip of the hat to Wizard of Oz there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, and that was probably the Continuum's way of just playing a joke. Doing something truly cruel and evil, but at the same time, just having a sense of humor about it. And I just really enjoy watching Amanda's growth through the episode, as she's like, no, 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 and how she then slowly embraces the ways of the Q and her powers and has fun with it as well. Because just some scenes where Q's teaching how to embrace her powers and they're appearing left, right, and center throughout the ship. For me, really, I know it's not a deep episode. There's no subliminal messaging. It's not Deep Space Nine. But for me personally, it's just a fun ride. It's just a fun ride, and I like to whack it on and not have an episode that I need to think a lot about.
We all need those.
There's some, of course, whenever you have Q, you have some great lines with him and what he does. Mark was probably pretty mad when he turned Crusher into a dog.
Oh, dear. Yeah, no, that was funny.
And this is where he also gives the one-liner after, you know, Picard has one of his speeches. Basically, Jean-Luc, this is why I come back, just to hear you.
Yeah.
To listen to these wonderful speeches of yours.
Exactly. I have always loved the relationship between Q and Picard. Because it really did progress throughout all of the series, and around this point, it's when they were almost at their closest. Q obviously secretly absolutely loves Picard. Picard is his favorite pet, and to Picard, I think there's some sort of as much as he would hate to admit it. There's definitely a slight fondness there, I think. Not that he would ever admit such a thing.
Of course not.
Yeah, and John Delancey is fantastic. Can't fault him whatsoever. So yeah, and as I said, because I've watched it so many times growing up, it's just one of them ones that just. You know how sometimes a piece of music or a TV program can just sometimes like transport you to a certain place in time, and that's what that episode does to me as well. So that's why I've got a particularly fond place in my heart for that episode.
Right, the nostalgia.
Yeah.
Puts you back to where you first saw it.
Yeah, exactly. I remember exactly that being in the bookshop that had just suddenly stocked a whole bunch of TNG VHSs and had them all just like bundled into this big bin, and it was priced about £9. So I think that works out about $15-16. So
right.
And that was for just the two episodes, that and Schisms. So, and I really enjoy Schisms as well, though at the time it did freak me out slightly. So I would end up watching True Q a lot more.
How old were you?
I would have probably been... We're probably talking about 8.
Yeah, Schisms would have freaked you out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It never like damaged me. It never damaged me in any way whatsoever. It's just one of them ones that I would watch during the day.
Are you sure you're not damaged?
That's debatable.
I tease because I love.
Don't worry, don't we all? Trust me, Paul knows that better than anyone. So yeah, no, I fully understand. But, that is my personal desert island. I think it's slightly different.
But I have a question for you. I would have been sure that you would have chosen All Good Things. Yep. So tell me why you didn't choose All Good Things.
How are you meant to choose out of 700 odd hours of Trek? It's
because I'm mean and I make you do it.
Exactly, right? You're a sadist. I, to be honest, all good things is probably near on. It's a 11 out of 10 episode. It really is, and I could watch that countless times. But I felt that with my Desert Island, I didn't necessarily want to... It's me once again not wanting to just go with the norm and go with what's expected of me. I wanted to take something slightly different that still means just as much to me, but just for different reasons.
Because
All Good Things is just one of them episodes that I don't know how it could not strike a chord with anyone. Mm. You get the entire series from beginning to end, all just melded together, wrapped up and put into a lovely bow that you just want to engulf yourself in.
There would be some people who would argue they do not want to go back to Encounter at Farpoint, though.
I like Encounter at Farpoint. That's the thing. I know a lot of people don't, but I'm not sure if it's nostalgia factor again. I'm very, very forgiving.
Definitely have to be.
Yeah, I'm very forgiving of Encounter at Farpoint. I do enjoy Encounter at Farpoint. I would say it's nowhere near as bad as what a lot of people say it is. I'm not sure about you guys.
Definitely not as bad as Justice.
No, definitely not.
But I understand what you mean about being a little bit different with your choices for your Desert Island Trek, because I probably included a couple that people would look at that and scratch their heads and say, oh, that's not such a great episode, it's an only okay episode. But I have my reasons for choosing those, so.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's you are the ruler of this section, Xena, so... It's your game. We have to play by your rules.
I do have to give credit where credit is due, because this was actually Paul Finch's idea initially. I just took it and ran with it.
Just between you and me, all the best ideas come from other people. You just steal them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it's definitely a section that I've always enjoyed hearing. Different people's opinions.
We 10 Forward recorded last night, and it'll be up on the website and in all the usual places this coming Friday. Mm-hmm. And we had Anthony Davis on, the co-host of the Trek Trivia, so tune in on Friday to get his choices, and he has some very interesting choices as well and some very interesting opinions, so I will look forward to hearing what everybody's reaction to what he chose and what he says.
Excellent.
That's a teaser.
Definitely. And a little teaser for you, Xena. When we spoke to Larry earlier on in the week, Larry Nemechek, we did get him to do his own Desert Island Trek off the cuff. We never gave him any warning, just lumbered it on him.
Wow, perfect. Because usually, you know, when I say, hey, can you come on the show, and I give you, you know, a few days to think about it, that was kind of mean of you, Wayne.
Yeah, but I figured if I didn't ask, I would have an upset Miss Alvarado.
So when did you say that would come on?
It's going to be on at some point today. We've got two more sections of Larry's interview, I think. So, and it's on the final one. So it's probably going to be somewhere nearer towards the 6-ish mark. Somewhere around there.
Okay. Perfect.
So, yeah, keep your ears to the ground. It'll be there.
Well, that'll be great.
So
thank you. Your choices, I'll have those up on the website.
Oh, you're more than welcome, more than welcome. I've really enjoyed putting it together for you. It was something that, I don't know, I didn't spend forever on. I wanted it to be a very natural sort of thing. But as you said, I ended up debating a lot between certain episodes, like All Good Things.
What
do
other
I keep it in? Do I take it
almost
out?
Made the cut.
Sorry?
What other episodes almost made the cut?
Oh, The Visitor.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, but that's on your gimmies, isn't it?
It is. You already get that.
Yeah, yeah. So I can live knowing that I'm going to be able to watch Tony Todd performing at his absolute best. So
the Enterprise close Enterprise episode that nearly got on the list.
I'm sorry, Michael. Say that again.
I was asking Wayne if he had any Enterprise episodes that were close to getting on the list.
The thing is, E Squared is already on there. Isn't it on the list, I think?
It is.
It is,
and
yeah.
And Paul thinks we're crazy, but yes, it is.
No, I enjoy that. I enjoy that, and that would have been one that I also picked. But with Enterprise, the only thing is, unlike all of the other series, I've only watched through Enterprise once, and I'm currently on my rewatch, going through it. So if I had been chucked on my island in 6 months' time, it very well could have been a slightly different island, because at the moment I'm still... I remember, I'd say 98% of Enterprise episodes... But where I haven't watched them multiple times, where I was just watching them on the TV, they haven't engulfed themselves into my brain as much as what the other series have. So it's not detracting anything away from Enterprise, because I absolutely love the series. It's just that I didn't know where to go with it. I didn't know what episodes to pick.
Hmm.
Huh, we might have to strand you in the future on the desert island.
Yeah.
Jacqueline and Matt and I have talked about doing themes in the future. Once we've exhausted all the people who want to share their overall desert island choices, doing themes like Klingon episodes or time travel episodes, something like that.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Definitely. That would be fun. And I was also slightly surprised at myself as well, because when I was picking it, because I had decided to go with the Cage, it pretty much meant that I wasn't going to take a TOS episode with me. So that was TOS got totally left out in the dark. So that was another
That's
series.
Okay, I left TOS out completely, because my most favorite episode, if that makes any sense, is The City on the Edge of Forever, and that is a gimme, so that took care of that.
That's the thing, your two gimmies, your other gimme is also The Trouble with Tribbles, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're two episodes out of the TOS that I give flat out a 10 out of 10, because they really do just, they're amazing. They're amazing, and I'm glad that they're with us as well, because otherwise they're the ones that I would have missed from TOS. But once again, I think it's a question of, because TOS is a series that I discovered later in life, because when I was younger, I really couldn't get over the lack of decent special effects. And I couldn't see past the styrofoam rocks. It was just a mindset, and TOS was something that I grew into and gained an appreciation for. So it's definitely something that I feel I love more now than I did then, but I just don't have that same emotional bond with the series. Oh, I do with the movies, TOS movies.
I think you're right. I think I like the movies more because that's what I grew up with, as opposed to watching the TOS and reruns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. About yourself, Michael, because obviously you're also like slightly older than myself, so was you more of a TOS rerun guy?
I think I'm the opposite. It's like with you saying you're beginning to appreciate TOS more now. I'm the same with Enterprise. I'm starting to appreciate that more now because I grew up with Next Generation, but I wasn't that old enough then not to have seen TOS. So TOS was very fresh for me then. And I sort of went back and bought the VHSs of the TOS and grew up, watched them at the same time as I was watching Next Generation. And I think now it's a case of I'm going back to Enterprise and I'm beginning to appreciate that more than I used to.
I think that's a good thing. Because what about yourself, Cena? Because you didn't actually watch through Enterprise on its initial run.
No, I'm actually doing that now. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, no, I'm really enjoying it, but the Voyager rewatch along with the Delta Quadrant, and I want to start doing with what time, I don't know, but doing a DS9 rewatch and also a TNG rewatch. Mm-hmm. But I'm seeing so many more things than when I originally saw the episodes. Maybe it's doing the podcasting and having to look at it with a more critical eye, but B, also a more detailed eye. Mm-hmm. When you're younger, you just kind of go for the entertainment value. And now that I'm older, I'm seeing that it's much more than just the surface sometimes with a lot of the episodes. And I'm getting a lot more out of the episodes now than I did before, and I'm enjoying doing that. If you ask me, and it's on the website, if you ask me what my favorite series is, it's always pretty much the one that I'm watching currently. So.
Yeah, no, and that's understandable. That's very much true to how Paul also looks at the series as well. So, yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad that we managed to finally get it out of the way, because I didn't mean out of the way. I mean, get actually round to doing that, because I have been meaning to do a desert island for quite a while, but sometimes time zones are a bugger.
Yes, they are. But no, I'm glad I finally have yours, and I think I from the Trekmate family. I still need Paul Drinkwaters, so Paul, you need to start our game list together, and Fez's as well, because I think pretty much everybody else I have. Plus, of course, if you're interested in being on 10 Forward and giving us your desert island choices, please do not hesitate to either tweet me or email us.
What's your email for everybody?
Okay, the email is trekmate10forward@gmail.com. And the address is @10forward1701. And my personal Twitter is @queencatblue, and cat is spelled with a K.
And also, since we're good, unfortunately, we don't always get a chance to speak to each other voice to voice very often. I just wanted to say how much of a fantastic job you have been doing, Cena, and I really appreciate all of the effort that you do put into 10 Forward, and it's very apparent that you care a lot about the pod, and that means a lot to us as well. Not only as listeners, but as family members, so you get what you sow.
That's very nice, but I couldn't do it without Jacqueline and Matt and all our guests. You know, Michael's been on, and of course Mark and Adam and Paul Finch, even though, you know, they kind of, you know, wrecked it along with JD and Fez, but, you know, without all our guests, you know, we wouldn't be anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you and Mark can sit in your rooms and chat Trek for hours on end, but the whole purpose of our particular podcast is we need guests, and so we're very grateful when people agree to come on and talk with us. Mm-hmm. So thank you to everybody.
And as you say, you're always there to listen.
I am. I'm a very good listener. Maybe not as great as Guinan, but I'm a very good listener.
So I don't think anyone's as great as Guinan, so I wouldn't take that too hard. I hold Guinan on a very high pedestal, so yeah, don't feel too bad. So, but thank you so much for joining us, Cena. I said that you're going to have to pop off now.
Right.
Is that right? You're not able to stick with us any longer?
Unfortunately not. It's 8 o'clock now, and I have to start the day and get going.
Real
life intrudes. What? I can't talk Trek for 24 hours straight?
Thank you for having me on.
I hope everybody enjoyed it, and nice to talk to you again, Michael, and you too, Mark.
I'm sure Mark will appreciate that. So thank you so much, Cena, and to a cake, also known as Let's Go for a Wee Time. So here we go.
Captain's log, stardate 411-53.7. Our destination is planet Deneb 4, beyond which lies the great unexplored mass of the galaxy.
Yeah.